Hare
Now, according to his plans, he had a week left in America. This is the end of that letter to Sumati Maharaj. My term to stay in America will be finished by the 17th of November, 1965. But I am believing in your foretelling. Quote, you should stay there until you fully recover your health and return after you have completed your mission. End quote. Now an advertisement. Tagar Society of New York, Incorporated, cordially invites you to a lecture, God Consciousness, by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Date, Sunday, November 28th, 1965. Time, lecture, 3:30 p.m. Tea, 4:30 p.m. Place, New India House, 3 East 64th Street. A widely respected scholar and religious leader in India, Swami Bhaktivedanta is briefly visiting New York. He has been engaged in a monumental endeavor of translating the 60-volume Srimad Bhagavatam from Sanskrit into English. November 28th. David Harun had never met Srila Prabhupada. He was a musician living downtown, and he used to attend the meetings of the Tagore Society up on 64th Street. Did I say David? No. What did I say? Did I say Dowd? No. Oh, well, his name is Dowd Harun. Sure, I think I said David.
I think you said Dave.
Dave, because I was thinking of David before. I said, isn't he supposed to come back now? Dowd Harun. I went uptown and walked into the auditorium, and I noticed that the stage was empty and a few people were sitting towards the rear of the auditorium. I walked forward down the center aisle because I usually like to sit up front. Then I saw an old gentleman sitting over to the right, and he sort of drew me over to him. So I went over and sat beside him, and then I noticed he was saying his beads, or chanting japa. Even though he had his beads in a bag, I could hear them and I could see his body moving. And I felt very comfortable because this was something I was used to. As I was sitting there looking around the auditorium, he just turned around and smiled at me very nicely. He nodded his head and I nodded my head. And he smiled and turned around. Then he turned back to me again and softly asked me, if I was from India. I said, no, sir, I am not from India. I am from here, the United States. He turned back and he kept chanting with his beads. Then he turned around the next time and asked if I was Hindu. I said, no, sir, I am not a Hindu. I am a Muslim. And he said, oh, very good, very good. Yes, many times I hear the children in India reciting the Quran. And then he turned back around, and his body was moving, rocking, and he was working with his beads. Then there were a few more exchanges of pleasantries, sort of intermittent. And then a lady came up on the stage and announced that the lecture was to begin. And if the folks could give the speaker a round of applause, they would welcome him to the stage. At that point, the man I was sitting next to put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Excuse me." "Oh, excuse me, sir, could you do me a favor?" And I said, "Yes, anything." He said, "Would you watch over my books?" I looked down on the floor, and he had several boxes of books and an umbrella and several other articles. I said, "Yes, I would watch over these." And he said, "Excuse me." He walked up the aisle, and surprisingly, he walked up on the stage. And it was the man I had come to hear, Swami Bhaktivedanta. He walked up on the stage and introduced himself to the people and tried to get them to come forward. He said, "Come forward, come forward." A few of them came up to the front. There were mixed couples, many Indians, male and female, mostly middle-aged and some college-aged. A lot of professor types and ladies were there. Then he began his speech. He dove right into it. He just started exclaiming, proclaiming the greatness of the Creator, and that the most important thing is to remember the Creator and remember God. He began to expand on God consciousness, what God consciousness is and how God is everywhere, and how it behooves us all to remember God, no matter what we call him, what names we call him by, but that we should call him. He gave a demonstration which was very moving. He chanted Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and spoke about the power and saving grace in the mantra. He took a little break about halfway through and had some water. The last thing he said as he was coming down from the podium was that he had copies of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He explained that he had been working on them and that they came in three volumes and were $16. Then he concluded and came down. A lot of people went over to him. Some were timid, some were enthusiastic. Some people shook his hand and were asking for books. At first, there were about 15 people gathering around him, talking to him and asking questions. With so many people around, he came over to me and said, "Sir, would you do me one more favor? Will you kindly take over the selling of the books? People will be coming to you for the books, so you sell the books and put the money in this little box. And I will be with you in a minute." I said, "Fine." So while he talked to the people, others came up to me. They must have thought I was somehow his secretary or his traveling companion. And people were coming over to me and asking me personal questions about him, which I couldn't really answer because I didn't know. Some people were buying the books or looking through them. So this went on. And I was trying to listen to him carry on his conversations with people and carry on the book selling at the same time. Some of the people were looking for a guru and trying to find out what he was supposed to be. Some of them were really interrogating him, but he just smiled and answered all their questions simply. I remember he told them, "You will know, there is no pressure, you will know if I am your guru." He suggested that people go over and read the books. And then the group dwindled down to about half a dozen. And the few remaining were just looking at him. And some were too timid to approach him. He walked over to them and spoke to them, putting them at ease. Later he came over and we counted the collection. And I helped him pack up his box and carry downstairs the boxes of books that were left. As we parted, he thanked me very much. And I gave him my name and address and phone number and purchased a set of the Srimad Bhagavatams. Chapter 4. It will not be possible to assist you. I have come here in this old age neither for sightseeing nor for any personal interest. It is for the interest of the entire humanity that I am trying to implement the science of Krishna, which will actually make them happy. So it is the duty of every devotee of Lord Krishna to help me by all means. From a letter to Sumati Muraji. November passed and December came, and Prabhupada having obtained an extension on his visa, stayed on. America seemed so opulent, yet many things were difficult to tolerate. The sirens and bells from fire engines and police cars seemed like they would crack his heart. Sometimes at night he would hear a person being attacked and crying for help. From his first days in the city, he had noted that the smell of dog stool was everywhere. And although it was such a rich city, he could rarely find a mango to purchase. And if he did, it was very expensive and usually had no taste. From his room, he would sometimes hear the horns of ocean liners, and he would dream that someday he would sail around the world with the Samkirtan party. Preaching in all the major cities of the world. The weather went below freezing, colder than he had ever experienced in India. Daily he had to walk toward the Hudson against a west wind that even an ordinary winter's day would take your breath away and make your eyes water and your face grow numb. On a stormy day, the driving wind and sudden gusts could even knock a man down. Sometimes the cold rain would turn the streets slick with ice. The cold would become especially severe as one approached the shelterless, windswept area of West Side Drive, where occasional whirlwinds carried brown leaves and paper trash mysteriously high into the air. Srila Prabhupada wore a coat Dr. Misra had given him, but he never gave up wearing his dhoti despite the cold, windy walks. Swami Nikhilananda of the Ramakrishna Mission had advised Prabhupada that if he wanted to stay in the West, he should abandon his traditional Indian dress and strict vegetarianism. Meat-eating and liquor, as well as pants and coat, were almost a necessity in this climate. He said, before Prabhupada had left India, one of his godbrothers had demonstrated to him how he should eat in the West with a knife and fork. But Prabhupada never considered taking on Western ways. His advisors cautioned him not to remain an alien, but to get into the spirit of American life, even if it meant breaking vows he had held in India. Almost all Indian immigrants compromised their old ways. But Prabhupada's idea was different, and he could not be budged. The others may have had to compromise, he thought, but they had come to beg technological knowledge from the West. I have come not to beg something, he said, but to give something. In his solitary wanderings, Srila Prabhupada made acquaintances with a number of local people. There was Mr. Rubin, a Turkish Jew, who worked as a New York City subway conductor. Mr. Rubin met Prabhupada on a park bench, and being a sociable fellow and a world traveler, sat and talked with the Indian holy man, Mr. Rubin. He seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. He would look out and say, I am not a poor man, I am rich. There are temples and books, they are existing, they are there, but the time is separating us from them. He always mentioned we and spoke about the one who sent him, his spiritual master. He didn't know people at that time, but he said, I am never alone. He always looked like a lonely man to me. That's what made me think of him like a holy man. Elijah, who always went out alone, I don't believe he had any followers. When the weather was not rainy or icy, Prabhupada would catch the bus to Grand Central Station and visit the Central Library on 42nd Street. His Srimad Bhagavatams were there, some of the same volumes he had sold to the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi, and he took pleasure in seeing them listed in the card catalog and learning that they were being regularly checked out and read. He would sometimes walk through UN Plaza or walk up to New India House on 64th Street, where he had met Mr. Malhotra, a consulate officer, It was through Mr. Malhotra that he had contacted the Tagore Society and had secured an invitation to lecture before one of their meetings back in November. Riding the bus down Fifth Avenue, he would look out at the buildings and imagine that someday they could be used in Krishna consciousness. He would take a special interest in certain buildings, one on 23rd Street and one with a dome on 14th Street attracted his attention. He would think of how the materialist had constructed such elaborate buildings and yet made no provisions for spiritual life. Despite all the great achievements of technology, the people felt empty and useless. They had built these great buildings, but the children were going to LSD. Yes. What is LSD? LSD. I forget. It's some kind of the name is LSD. Is three letters. Some lysergic. I can't remember the technical term for it, but it's a kind of chemical that came up. I think it was synthesized before, but it became popular in the 60s. That the hippies would take that, and it basically speaking makes you crazy, and you hallucinate, see all kinds of strange things. That somehow or another they think it's nice, but like that. I think it's official in America that if you've taken it seven times, you can be classified as clinically insane, like that. So, like that. Any other description on what is LSD? Huh? Okay. December 2nd. New York Times headline. New York City hospitals report marked rise in LSD cases admitted for care. Like that. Protest against U.S. participation in Vietnam War mounts. Vietnam. If you keep going east from here, right? Because India, then you get to Bangladesh. Then after Bangladesh, you get to Burma. And then after Burma, you get to Thailand. And after Thailand, then you get to Kampuchea. Then, and Laos. And then, just before you fall into the ocean over there, then there is Vietnam. And somehow or another, Vietnam is divided into North and South. So the North was communist, and the South was, I'm not sure, I think they were independent, but originally they were, I think,
French.
Yeah, they were a French colony. So they were very, you know.
Everyone, actually. Hmm? French and then Dutch also.
Oh, Dutch also. So they were, you know, quite developed, westernized and that, more than any of the other countries over there. And so somehow or another, at some point, the North Vietnam decided that they should have South Vietnam, and it should also be communist, and somehow or another, South Vietnam didn't appreciate that. And so, because America was, it's somehow or another self-appointed duty is to keep communism from spreading around the world, so they started a war there that somehow or another nobody really appreciated. Maybe for the fact that, 50,000, American kids died there, but other than that, so. At that time, it was because their thing was, peace, love, not war, peace, all these kind of, nice things, sit around, do nothing, take LSD, go crazy, be taken to the hospital, like that, so.
They lost.
Lost, yes. They lost the war, yeah, they had to pull out after 8 years like that, somehow or another. Place is just, over there, just rice fields other than the cities, but somehow or another they couldn't do anything. It was one of the stranger wars like that. very, very drawn out for a very long time. I don't know if it was because lack of commitment, they didn't go in there forcefully, or if it's just they just couldn't beat the Viet Cong.
They were outsmarted.
Outsmarted by the Viet Cong. Yeah, like that. I think also you had the element because there were so many, because it wasn't just North Vietnamese, it was the Chinese who come down.
There wasn't many Chinese.
There wasn't so many. Oh, okay.
They were just purely outsmarted.
Oh, okay. They were just
They were fighting a face-to-face war.
Uh-huh.
And the Viet Cong were not interested in a face-to-face conflict.
Uh-huh.
So they used propaganda, they used, guerrilla tactics.
Basically. Oh, okay.
And they won the war in America, not in Vietnam.
They
won the war in America.
Oh, okay.
Through, the media, and all that.
Oh, okay.
And then the Americans had to pull out because too many were getting killed and no one getting anywhere.
Okay. So, that's the Vietnam War, okay? The weather grew cold. Because this was, when was this? So this was 66 then. The weather grew cold, but there was no snow in December. On Columbus Avenue, shops were selling Christmas trees, and the Continental restaurants were bright with holiday lighting. On 72nd, the Retailers Association erected tall red poles topped with green tinsel Christmas trees. The tops of the trees on both sides of the street sprouted tinsel garlands that spanned the street and joined in red tinsel stars, surrounded by colored lights. Tinsel, I'm not exactly sure it is, but I think it's kind of like like if you take aluminum foil and cut it in very thin, thin strips, something like that. I think it's, like that. It's some kind of metal thing, and then that's hung on things. It's supposed to give the idea like snow, and snow's on the trees, and it hangs in the icicles. And yes.
What is Christum?
What is Christum?
Christmas.
So you know what a Christmas tree is, so you just want to know what Christmas is.
I don't know.
You don't know? What don't you know?
I don't know what Christmas is.
You don't know what Christmas is. Christmas is the the celebration of Jesus Christ's appearance day. It's like his Vyas Puja. Okay? So, somehow or another, he was born, I think, in August or September, but because the Romans had decided to make it the national religion of Christianity, so the biggest holiday in the year was on December 25th, which was a festival for Jupiter, for Brihaspati. And so then they converted that day into his day, like that. The Western Roman Empire, because when it split, and then the Eastern Roman Empire, I think they celebrate Christmas on January 6th or something like that. So it seems to be kind of arbitrary. Whatever was, the big festival, then that's what they made into Christmas. And, you think about it, right? Jesus appeared in Israel, in Palestine. So it would be kind of like along the same, like Bombay or something. I don't know that it gets cold there at all. And so definitely there would be no snow. There'd be not one pine tree to be found, within miles. But somehow or another, I'm not sure why Christmas is celebrated with a Christmas tree. So they go out and there's these kind of like pine trees. Where are the pine trees? There's a pine. Well, there was over in the temple, but they cut them down or they died in the flood. The one kind of tree that has a central straight trunk, and then the branches come out straight and around, and instead of regular leaves, they have little like needles on them. Yeah, little green needles like that. And they have pine cones, and these pine cones have little pine nuts in them.
And the squirrels go nuts over the pine nuts and the pine cones on the pine trees. And, so then you take the tree and you put all kinds of decorations on it, you know, always some kind of little funny little colored things and tinsel, and they put a little red star on the top. I'm not exactly sure what the star is, unless that's the star. Star of David. Oh, okay. That's cool. The star that guided the three wise men. Because that was there before. So, because there was a constellation, I forget what it was, but is did you figure that out, what planets those were? No. Okay. But one of the planets was very, very bright at that time, and it's right next to the moon. And so then, I guess that's special, and then three wise men, you know, means these magis. We discussed before, the magis are a group of they have their own philosophy, they've taken the Vedic philosophy, turned it upside down, and made it into something. They're sun worshippers. So they were a group of Brahmins from India that, because of their weird philosophy that the demons are the good guys and the devas are the bad guys, then Vashishta kicked them out of India, and they went over to Iran. Iran is, if you go west, then you have India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, then Iran. And then if you go north, then you have Berserkistan, Insanistan. Quackistan, yes. And like that. And so then they went from there seeing that and went over there and somehow or another figured out where Jesus was. And they gave some, you know, frankincense and that kind of stuff. So then how it turned into it, then there's this very jolly kind of fat guy who was named he was Saint Nicholas. I'm not sure where he was. I think he's a German guy.
I think Denmark.
Denmark, okay, something over there, some kind of. And supposedly he lives on the North Pole with a bunch of dwarfs who spend the whole year making presents. How they know how to make iPods and, you know, video games and all that, I'm not sure, but, you know, I guess they have the technology. And and he wears this kind of like big red suit and red hat and, you know, all that kind of thing. And he flies around on a chariot that doesn't have wheels because it's got snow on the North Pole, so it's got like rails on it. And driven by reindeer, right? And one of them is very famous because his nose is red. That, so he's the head deer. That's his name's Rudolph, like that. Like that. All I can remember, one of the other ones is Vixen, I think. But other than that, but you know, they all have names and all that. So then the idea is that during Christmas, Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas, then he somehow or another miraculously flies around to every Christian house on the planet. Even though he's so fat, he crawls down the chimney and he places lots of. Isn't this? I mean, it's like everybody thinks it's so funny. It is, right? And crawls out of the chimney, and he, amazing thing, he never gets sooty. Right? Yeah, it's got some new, I think, spray-on anti...
Teflon.
Teflon suit on. So, and then he puts all these already nicely wrapped presents with everybody's names on them and all that. And then climbs back up the chimney and then goes to the next house. You know, gets back in his chariot and goes to the next house. And somehow or another, the kids, they all make a list of what they want before Christmas. They hand that to their parents. The parents somehow or another get it to Santa. And Santa then looks in the book and sees if you've been good or bad. And if you've been good, then you get presents. And if you've been bad, you don't. So then at least for 2-3 weeks before Christmas, all the kids are, you know, tend to be really good like that. So it's like, you know, so 3 weeks out of 52, you know, then, you know, I guess it's something. And does this make any sense? Okay. I leave out anything? Yes. Milk and cookies. Oh, you put out milk and cookies for Santa. You know, because he's into milk and cookies. Because on the North Pole, they have a really big goshal up there. So, it's really, you know, that's his normal diet. Stuff like that. Yes.
Could you kindly summarize in a nutshell the reality?
The reality. The reality is...
Because if you don't, then they're all going to believe.
Oh, okay. Somehow or another, how this came up... So basically, Christmas is become so popular. Previously, it was popular because... okay, we should start from the beginning. The beginning is St. Nicholas, I think he was, I'm not sure when he was, the 15, 1600, 1700, something like that. He's been, you know, dead and gone a long time. There is no factory with, you know, elves on the North Pole. You know, no one flies around in a chariot. There are no reindeer there. Yes, you go to North Finland and that, there are reindeer up there. But the parents go out and they buy all the presents, wrap them up, stick them under the trees, and then, you know, like that. And so it's become very popular because it's a huge industry for making money. So everybody's buying presents then. So everybody sells a lot of stuff. So the businessmen are very happy about all this and all that. So it's because of its economic venture, it's been publicized and made very popular. You know, like sports. Previously, you know, who cared about it? I think at one time, the American football, it was going to be, you know, just cease to exist as a sport. You know, and then somebody kept pushing, and then finally it caught on, and now it's a big, you know, huge money-making thing. So anything that makes money becomes popular. So therefore, Christmas has become popular. Most people don't, you know, that. It's not even a religious festival anymore. It's just some festival that you're supposed to go out and buy presents and give everybody. Like that. So what it's got to do with what? What that's got to do in celebration of Jesus' appearance day? You know, I'm not even sure they even remember him much like that.
Some go to church.
Yeah, those who would go to Mass or something like that, go to church, there'll be some remember. But most people don't. And so then it's just a matter of, you know, it's just become a, yeah, commercialized, you know, kind of program and all that. Yes, no, eyes not lighting up anymore. Like that. Okay. Okay. Although Srila Prabhupada did no Christmas shopping, he visited many bookstores, Orientalia, Sam Weiser's, Doubleday, The Paragon, and others, trying to sell his Srimad Bhagavatams. Mrs. Ferber, the wife of the Paragon Book Gallery proprietor, considered Prabhupada, quote, a pleasant and extremely polite small gentleman, end quote. The first time, because you see pictures of him, Prabhupada looks very tall because he sits up very straight. But standing up, he's only, I think he was 5'2", like that. So he's not that tall. But when he's sitting, he always looks tall because everyone else sits like slumped over, but he would sit up very straight, like that.
Even like a lot of, only sometimes when you see pictures, even when he's standing, do you think he's short? Mm-hmm. His energy.
If you just see him alone, you won't see, because he'd be shorter, but, you know, nice proportion. But he'll stand very straight, hold his head up, and like that. Because it's like Rahu, you know, pushes your head down. People walk around like this all the time. That's Rahu. Somehow it sits on your head, I guess, makes it heavy.
Got a few of those around.
So, like that. Yeah.
Anyone works out in your garden. Right? The first time he called, she wasn't interested in his books. But he tried again, and she took several volumes. Prabhupada used to stop by about once a week, and since his books were selling regularly, he would collect. Sometimes, when he needed copies to sell personally, he would come by and pick them up from Mrs. Ferber. And sometimes he would phone to ask her how his books were selling. Mrs. Ferber. Every time he came, he would ask for a glass of water. If a customer would make such a request, I would ordinarily say, there is the water cooler. But because he was an old man, I couldn't tell him that, of course. He was very polite always, very modest, and a great scholar. So whenever he would ask, I would fetch him a cup of water, personally.
Right, so they get to do some service. Huh?
Once Prabhupada was talking with Mrs. Ferber about Indian cuisine, and she mentioned that she specially liked samosas. The next time he paid her a visit, he bought a tray of samosas, which she enjoyed. Harvey Cohen came often to room 501 to visit the Swami, who had so impressed him at Ananda Ashram, Harvey. The room he occupied was a tiny office in the back of the Yoga Society in uptown Manhattan. I began to go there regularly, and we sat facing each other on the floor in his little office with his typewriter and a new tape recorder on top of two suitcases. And there was a box of books he had brought from India and a color reproduction of dancing figures, which he looked at often. What is a color reproduction of dancing figures? Okay. Yes, like this. I think it's Gornitai. They regularly look over at the picture. They just see some dancing figures. So. Oh, here. I told Swami Bhaktivedanta that I was an artist. Then he asked me to please paint the picture of the dancers, which he explained was of Lord Chaitanya and his disciples. The painting was called Sankirtana. Whenever I came to visit him, Swami would always be happy to see me. I told him about myself, and we chanted Hare Krishna together in his room many nights that winter. I would get the train uptown from my apartment to go see him. January 11, 1966. Prime Minister Lal Bahadur Shastri died of a heart attack while visiting Russia. The Prime Minister had been a personal acquaintance of Srila Prabhupada's in India and an admirer of a Srimad Bhagavatam translation. He had been scheduled to visit America, and Prabhupada had expected to obtain a personal sanction from him for the release of funds from India. His untimely death was a great upset in Srila Prabhupada's plans to purchase the building at 143 West 72nd Street. The retailers had shown him the building, and he had already mentally designed the interior for deity worship and the distribution of prasadam. The money was to come from India, and Prime Minister Shastri was to give a personal sanction for release of the funds. But suddenly, that was all changed. January 14th. Prabhupada decided to write to the owner of the building, Mr. A.M. Hartman. He explained how his plans had been upset, and he posed a new plan from the letter. Now the Prime Minister, Mr. Lal Bahadur Shastri, is suddenly dead, and I am greatly perplexed, as there is now great difficulty for getting money from India. I am requesting you to allow me to use the place for the International Institution for God Consciousness. Well, that's far out. So they just changed the institution to society and God to Krishna. At least for some time, the house is lying vacant for so many days without any use, and I learnt it that you are paying the taxes, insurance, and other charges for the house. although you have no income from there. If you, however, allow this place for this public institution, you shall at least save the taxes and other charges which you are paying now for nothing. If I can start the institution immediately, certainly I shall be able to get sympathy locally, and in that case, I may not be required to get money from India. I'm also requesting that Your Honor become one of the directors of this public institution, because you will give a place to start the institution. A.M. Hartman wasn't interested. On the same day he wrote Mr. Hartman, Prabhupada received a letter from Sir Parampat Singhania, the director of the very large JK organization in India. Prabhupada had written Sir Padmapatji for financial support, and his reply gave him hope. Not only was the Singhania family fabulously wealthy, but its members were devotees of Lord Krishna. From the letter, "My dear Swamiji, I have gone through your letter. I am very glad to note your idea of erecting a Sri Radha Krishna temple in New York. I think the proposal is a good one, but the following are the difficulties. One, we have got to send foreign exchange for building the temple, for which government sanction is required. Without the government sanction, no money can be sent abroad. If the government of India agrees, then one can think of erecting the temple in New York. Two, I doubt whether the small amount of rupees, 7 lakhs, $110,000, a temple can be built in New York. I mean to carry out a nice construction with Indian type of architecture. To get a temple completed in Indian type of architecture, we have to send a man from India. These are the two main difficulties. Otherwise, your idea is very good." Srila Prabhupada and Mr. Singhania had a basic disagreement. A magnificent Indian temple in New York would cost many millions of dollars to construct. Prabhupada knew, of course, that if Parampat Singhania wanted, he could provide millions of dollars. But then how would they get so much money out of India? Prabhupada therefore again suggested that they spend only 7 lakhs. Quote, "After purchasing the house," he wrote, "we can build another story upon it with the temple dome, chakra, etc." Prabhupada had his own line of reasoning. From the letter, from Prabhupada's letter, "Lord Dwarkadish exhibited his opulence at Dwarka with 16,000 queens, and it is understood that he built a palace for each and every queen, and that the palaces were made with jewels and stones, so that there was no need for artificial light in the palaces." Right? He built this palace out of jewels and stones, so that they keep the light, that they light everything. Right? Nice? Cool? "So your conception of building a temple for Lord Krishna is in opulence. But we are residents of Vrindavan, and Vrindavan has no palaces like your Dwarka. Vrindavan is full of forests and cows on the bank of the Jamuna. And Lord Krishna, in his childhood, played the part of a cowherd boy without any royal opulence, as you, the inhabitants of Dwarka, are accustomed. So when the Dwarka Wallas meet the Vrindavan Wallas, there may be a via media. With Sir Parampat's Dwarka-like wealth and Srila Prabhupada's Vrindavan-like devotion, Lord Krishna, the Lord of both Vrindavan and Dwarka, could be properly worshipped." January 21st. He received Ban Maharaj's reply 2 weeks before. He received Ban Maharaj's reply. 2 weeks before, Prabhupada had written to his godbrother, the director of the Institute of Oriental Philosophy in Vrindavan. That's the one across the street. You can't see anymore because of all the shops. But back there, there's a school. That he had found a place for a temple in New York, and that he wanted to install deities of Radha and Krishna. In his reply, Ban Maharaj quoted price estimates for 14-inch brass deities of Radha Krishna. But he also warned that to begin deity worship would be a heavy responsibility. Srila Prabhupada responded, "I think that after the temple has started, some men, even from America, may be available, as I see they have at the Ramakrishna Mission, as well as in so many yoga societies. So I'm trying to open a temple here because Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, wanted it. Prabhupada also requested Ban Maharaj's assistance in getting the government to sanction release of money he felt Sampat Singhania would donate. He mentioned that he had carried on an extensive personal correspondence with the Vice President of India, Dr. Radhakrishnan, who is also known to Ban Maharaj from the letter. Tell him that it is not an ordinary temple of worship, but an international institution for God consciousness based on the Srimad Bhagavatam. January 22nd. While Srila Prabhupada prayed to receive Radhakrishna in New York, a snowstorm hit the city. That morning, Srila Prabhupada, who had perhaps never before seen snow, woke and thought that someone had whitewashed the side of his building next door. Not until he went outside did he discover that it was snow. The temperature was 10 degrees. So that's 10 degrees, they're talking Fahrenheit. So I think water freezes at 32 degrees. So that would be, 22 degrees below zero. I think that's considered cold. So that would be like 10, 15 degrees centigrade below zero. The city went into a state of emergency, but Prabhupada continued his daily walks. Now he had to walk through heavy snow, only a thin dhoti beneath his overcoat, his head covered with his Swami hat. The main roads were cleared, but many sidewalks were covered with snow. Along the strip of park dividing Broadway, the gusting winds piled snowbanks to shoulder height and buried the benches. What's a snowbank? You know what a bank is? You know what a bank is? Yeah, so you have the side of the river. So you have a side of the river that's is snow instead of dirt. Yeah? That would work. Or it's a bank, means, you know, a building where they keep all you know, valuables and things like that. So people make these, what do you call it? Snow architecture and that, you know, people go see them. So the ones that are considered the most important, that are valuable, so then they put them in the bank so that they're kept safe. No one steals them. Yeah?
And they melt.
They melt, so that means the snow bank has to be cold. Like that. Snow bank will be just a, you know, kind of like on a river, it's this low and then it goes up. You know, so it's like pile of dirt like that. So the wind will blow the snow in such a way that it'll pile up in certain places. And when it gets very high, then it's called a snow bank. So this is like, you know, up, you know, basically as tall as you guys, and it would cover everything except for, you know, where they clean the streets. The Broadway kiosks, plastered with layers of posters and notices, were now plastered with additional layers of snow and ice. But despite the weather, New Yorkers still walked their dogs, the pets now wearing raincoats and mackinaws. Right. In other words, they had raincoats on and sweaters and like that. And
hats.
Yeah, some of them have hats on like that. Since pampering by American dog owners left Prabhupada with a feeling of surprised amusement. As he approached West End Avenue, he found the doormen blowing whistles to signal taxis as usual, but also scattering salt to melt the ice and create safe sidewalks in front of the buildings. In Riverside Park, the benches, pathway, and trees were glazed with ice and gave off a shimmering reflection from the sky. In the news, Selective Service officials announced the first substantial increase in the draft since the Korean War. A long-time peace ended with U.S. Air Force bombing North Vietnam. The New York transit strike ended after 3 weeks, and the transit labor leader died in a jail of a heart attack.
Make sense? Doesn't make sense. Couldn't care if it makes sense or not. Only one nod. So that means couldn't care less. So that's a couldn't care. Yeah, that's right. Too cold. The brain has already frozen. Like that. These guys are warm-blooded, right? Or do they, when it gets cold, they just slow down?
Because they might be reptilian.
Okay.
Well, frog-like. Amphibian.
Yeah, you see some sometimes in the pond, you know, when no one's looking, they're in the pond. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainita Gaura Premanandi.